Indeed, when we come together in beloved community, we feel day breaking in our souls. Today is Palm Sunday on the Christian calendar. Tomorrow evening begins the celebration of the Jewish holiday of Passover. Both holidays remind us about injustice. They remind us of how the poor, the stranger, those who are different in race and creed or gender or sexual orientation are still oppressed in our societies. Jesus and Moses were both leaders of oppressed people. Both were called to rise up the plight of their people, to make visible the oppression that they suffered at the hands of the privileged of their time, to work for freedom and justice and equality was their calling. Today we're reminded that we are called to do the same, to bring the values and the teachings and the moral light of this faith to the world. And now, as Mike lights our chalice, I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting printed in your order of service. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness does not overcome it. Let the light of our faith go before us, strong in hope, bright in faithfulness, and clear before our struggling steps. Each week is an invitation to embark on a journey inward to connect with the best in ourselves, and an outward journey, going with each other to a place of more justice and more love and more service, a place where the best in us can connect to the best in others. So won't you come and go with me to that land? I'd like to share with you two readings. The first is excerpted from Langston Hughes' poem. Let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plains seeking a home where he himself is free.
America never was America to me.
Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed from one above.
It never was America to me.
Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath. But opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe.
There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free.
Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars?
I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today despite the dream. Beaten yet today, O pioneers, I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years.
Oh, let America be America again, the land that never has been yet, and yet must be, the land where every man is free, the land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain, must bring back our mighty dream again.
Oh yes, I say it plain, America never was America to me, and yet I swear this oath, America will be.
Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain, all the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Our second reading is called Let My Country Awake by Rabindranath Tagore. Where the mind is without fear and the head is held high, where knowledge is free, where the world has not been broken up into fragments by narrow domestic walls, where words come out from the depth of truth, where tireless striving stretches its arms towards perfection, where the clear stream of reason has not lost its way, where the mind is led forward by thee into ever-widening thought and action, into the heaven of freedom. My God, let my country awake. For me, it's been both a difficult and enlightening journey to watch what's been happening in our country over the last few months from south of the border in Mexico. As you would guess, there is anger towards the U.S. and Mexico, but also there is disappointment among Mexicans who thought they knew what kind of country the United States is. In the city of San Miguel Allende, where my home is, there was a women's march to coincide with the women's march in Washington. And the mayor put out a specific invitation to the expat community to come and participate with him in a demonstration against the policies of the new U.S. administration. In his speech at that event, he said something like, "The more unwelcoming to Mexicans, the more degrading to Mexicans the U.S. becomes, the more welcoming to U.S. citizens San Miguel will be." But that sentiment was not just expressed at the official levels of government. There is a little old man in town who does odd jobs and drives a very beat-up pickup that's probably about 50 years old. He took a can of paint and a paintbrush and very roughly painted on the back tailgate of the truck, "U.S. citizens, welcome." The feeling of disappointment weighs heavily on the Mexican people, and I was asked again and again about a variety of actions and statements by our government, our president in particular. And in truth, they were hard and embarrassing questions. One person said something like, "We always knew America was great, so what does it mean when they say, make America great again?" Those are catchy words. We still hear them, people repeating those words when they're interviewed about what they think our president will do. Some will say, "He will make America great again." And I understand the appeal of that. For those who've been struggling in America, as Langston Hughes points out, America hasn't always lived up to what it should be for certain groups of people, for people of color, for the working poor whose wages have been stagnant, for women who still make substantially less for the same jobs as men. And for some of those people, particularly the factory workers, they do remember a time when their wages increased regularly, Their companies provided health care and pensions, and their standard of living was higher. So I get the appeal to them of those words. But for me, as I explained to my Mexican friends, I'm afraid those words really are a kind of code for something else. Maybe for a return to a time which might have been good for some, but at the expense of others. I'm afraid those words raise up old prejudices and hatreds towards those whose position may have improved since the time when those other folks thought that America was great. What I hear is a desire among the majority governing our country is that we need a country that's great for business. And I don't think that anyone that disagrees with the idea that a favorable business climate that encourages the hiring of many people is not a good idea. You know, there are proposals by both sides of the political aisle to invest in much-needed infrastructure projects and even make some changes in corporate tax structure. And if that were what was meant by make America great again, I could buy into that slogan. But there's more to it. In that slogan and in the policies we've seen either implemented or attempted so far, I think there needs to be a couple of words added to the slogan, at least to match it with what I'm hearing. What I'm hearing is make America great again for the wealthy. Make America great again for the privileged, for the straight, conservative, white male, and do it at the expense of others. The words and actions, the legislation and attempted legislation, just color the meaning of those words for me. For me, that statement is colored with sentiments that are racist, anti-woman, anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, anti-Semitic, anti-equal rights for GBLT folks. And because of the way these words are colored, I think they connect with the worst rather than the best part in people. In the past 50 years to 75 years, America has made substantial progress in the struggle for civil rights and equality. We know some of those changes have been difficult for people to accept. I believe this movement, this direction, this subtext gives those people permission to express deeply buried hatred and fear. There's a powerful subtext, sometimes subtle and sometimes not so subtle, being expressed. And that message directly conflicts with the moral values that America is supposed to stand for. As Langston Hughes points out, we have never fully realized these moral values for lots of folks. As Martin Luther King said in his famous I Had a Dream speech, for many, we have not made good on the check of American equality and opportunity and justice for all. But we have been moving in that direction. And now it feels like we're quickly trying to undo much of that progress. And that's what goads my conscience. That's what makes what's happening in our political world a topic that must be addressed from pulpits in churches. Let's put it simply. The plans, the issuing and rescinding of executive orders, the legislation proposed and some passed, some of the appointments to positions in the cabinet and even on the bench are offensive to my values and to the values that we say we affirm as Unitarian Universalists. Some, not all, but some are simply morally wrong. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm the inherent worth and dignity of every person. We affirm justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. We respect the environment, the interdependent web of all existence. We affirm the free and responsible search for truth and commit to strive for world community. So how do we square those moral values with a law that would take the health coverage of 24 million people away, that would likely deny insurance coverage to the people who need it? Can we really just justify it by saying it might cost less for others and insurance companies would make more money? Can we justify it by saying it gives people freedom not to have health care coverage or to have less? What kind of freedom is that? No one freely chooses not to have health care coverage for themselves and their family. But they may be forced to make that choice because it comes down to one between buying food and paying the rent or paying for insurance. You know, while other first world countries recognize a right of all people to basic health care and feel the government has a moral obligation to provide an affordable way for them to get it, the present leadership in our country seems to want to move in the opposite direction, what I consider an immoral direction. How do we square our principles with a policy that would allow for the production of dirty and polluting energy that will destroy our air and water, especially at a time when clean energy options are more and more available? Is it enough that fossil fuel companies make more money? And of course, there are people in coal mining country that have lost jobs. And let's be honest, we should have done something about this long ago. But sending them back into unsafe mines is surely not the answer. Why can't we put them to work in clean energy? You know, no one ever got black lung disease building solar panels or windmills. And how do we square our values and principles and the goal of world community that we profess with our crazy policy towards Mexico? The way we have offended our allies and become unwilling to criticize nations that constantly are committing human rights violations. How do we square that? How do we square our moral proclamations of the equality and the inherent worth and dignity of every individual with policies that are anti-women, anti-transgender, anti-gay, anti-Muslim, anti-poor, anti-black? And finally, even if we can look the other way when policies are less than compassionate, or when they hurt the environment, or when they discriminate against certain groups of people, what are we to do with the fact that the words from the mouth of our president are often lies? Truth-telling is fundamental to moral government. What Tagore yearned for his country in that reading is what I yearn for mine. A place where words come out of the depth of truth and the clear stream of reason has not been lost. And I don't believe we're seeing that now. We're in a moral mess. And it's the duty of religion to raise these issues. For me, government that is truthful and advances policies that are consistent with the values we affirm is what will make America great. As I mentioned earlier, and you know, today is Palm Sunday on the Christian calendar, and tomorrow the Jewish holiday of Passover begins. Both those holidays tell stories of great prophets who spoke truth to power, who said that prosperity for the wealthy is not enough, who sought a better life for the least among them, who challenged leaders when they mistreated the stranger, the immigrants in their land. The Passover hymn we just sang posed a powerful question for us. What modern pharaoh lives in arrogance crowned? Who shall be sent to challenge folly unbounded? Those who belong to the faith that Jesus and all the Hebrew prophets taught, one that said we must put the least first, care for the sick, welcome the stranger, have to be among those called to challenge the policies that are now being advanced. I don't care if you're a Republican, a Democrat, an Independent, a Libertarian, a Green Party member. The words and actions, the subtext and the dishonesty that we are experiencing should offend you. This really is not about right and left. It's about right and wrong. It's about what is morally right and morally wrong. I, too, want America to be great. I just have a very different idea of what a great America is. America has fallen short many times in the past. But generally, when it has, those of good conscience on both sides of the political aisle have called her to task. An America that is guided by the highest of moral principles and values in its policies and decisions, in the way its leaders speak and act, that's what is a great America. You know, from the anti-slavery movement to the women's suffrage movement, from the civil rights movement to the movement for gay and transgender rights, from the anti-war movement to the environmental movement, it has been the job of liberal religion to speak truth to power. Nothing new in it. It's what Moses and Jesus did. We cannot be complacent. We must use our voices to make America moral again. I believe if we speak with honest conviction, we'll be heard. These are challenging times, times when the teachings of our faiths and the faiths of many other people, faiths that put compassion and justice and equality first, need to be heard. We cannot falter in our commitment to build a land, an America, where justice rolls down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. The promised land that can be. The moral voice needs to be heard not just here within these walls, but also in the halls of government and in the debates of our time. This is our calling.